Beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in the Allstate Showcase studio as the summer continues unabated. We hope to talk to John Najarian from CNBC in just a minute or so. I think he's wrapping up his on-air stint right now. A little bit later in the program, Suzanne Muchen will be along, and she tends to talk about women in the workplace issues. One of the things, I guess, Kim, that Suzanne wants to talk about is Gillette, and they have a program to incorporate young men into buying their products where they mail everyone razors when they turn 18. Did your sons run into that?
They did not. They use electric razors, but it's a great idea because it's just one of those things, sort of like the Amazon button that you press whenever you need it, you just get it. And obviously, you need razors all the time.
Yeah, when I went to school, the care package in my dorm was an Atra is the union, Atra razor. And that's what it got me hooked, and that's what I started using. So I will talk to Suzanne about that because apparently the program's in a little bit of trouble.
And why don't they do it for women? Well, I'm sure is that what she's going to talk about, I would think.
Actually,
women need razors too.
Names have changed so much, they're starting to send them to women accidentally and welcoming them to manhood.
Oh, nice.
So there's that. Let's welcome John Najarian into the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hello, friend. How are you?
Hello, Stephen. Great to be with you, sir.
Okay, so we have got a lot to talk about, a lot of earnings and all of that, and some more important than others, but I just got a soft spot in my heart for Chipotle, and it's looks like another rough day for them today.
Yeah, they got a big upgrade this morning. That looked like it might be enough to lift the stock pretty significantly, but then a problem. Some more folks getting sick in Virginia at a Chipotle restaurant, and that has the stock, you know, back down near the lows of the year already.
And so, I mean, we don't know yet, right, whether this is going to be a big deal or a little deal. It's just the fact that any deal for them under the microscope is going to have an impact.
Yeah, and we don't know for sure. I mean, Chipotle did the right thing, closed the restaurant down. Is going to see if there's anything, you know, in the food there that caused it or whether or not they're not calling it, of course, a fake. But,
right.
You know, you do when you trade stocks like we do, you always wonder whether or not somebody is pulling a Tylenol or one of these things where they're trying to drive a stock down by some nefarious action. So I think they did the right thing shutting down the restaurant, addressing it as quickly as they possibly could. That was a problem last time. And I think this is a better way of handling it. We'll see whether the result is better after we get a little more information.
Well, I hope that they do well because I do like what they do. And my daughter and we almost went for a burrito last night. Didn't do it, but maybe I will today to give a little emotional support to Chipotle. Goldman Sachs needs no emotional support from me at all, but they are having a bit of a rough day.
Yeah, well, you know, and the sort of world that I'm in anyway, Steve, 2.5% is not a bad day. you're right. Goldman Sachs came out with phenomenal revenue from their overall business, but their trading business was one of the lowest reports they've ever had as far as profitability. So revenue and profits were still strong at the company, but nonetheless, the fixed income trading, the commodities trading, they were both a lot less than the street was looking for, and thus you saw a decent sell-off, 2.5%, but that's not a huge move in my mind.
Okay, so, you know, and I could run down the list of different companies that have reported today, but is there something news-wise today that jumps out at you that you think maybe we should spend our time on otherwise?
Well, Netflix, of course.
Yeah.
The fact that their international subs are now passing the North American subs, that's a big deal.
John, explain that. What are subs? Explain that.
So the subscriptions.
Okay.
I'm sorry. The subscriptions to their service by international. I mean, they have a lot of programming that's built specifically for certain countries, and obviously a lot that is directed at English-speaking countries as well. And the fact that they're doing as well as they are internationally is a big plus for them right now. So Netflix shares jumping all the way up to about $185 a share. They closed $161 last night.
And weren't they declared dead a couple of times in their history?
Several.
Yeah.
And they're one of those companies a lot like Amazon where they really don't make much, but they're an extremely popular service like Amazon, and they just continue to grow. and people are willing to pay for that growth. If that growth stalls, you'd see a pretty significant sell-off, but you're certainly not seeing that today, just the opposite.
Tell me about their foreign markets then. If they're not producing, are they just coming to deals with, I don't know if it's, let's choose Spain, with other programs that are already produced in Spain and they're now making them available sort of on the secondary market, or are they paying to produce new Spanish programming?
They're producing programming
really?
As well. Yes, sir. And that is, one of their growth engines, obviously, here. And I think that we're likely to see that continue for them. This is very, very positive for Netflix.
Yeah, I'm a Netflix guy. I mean, I'm watching a series on. I did something last night or this week, John, that I've never done before. I actually paid for a TV series that's on free TV. And, you know, and if I'm going to do that, you know, there are a lot of other people doing it. But it's one of the things I never thought I would do. The show Atlanta, I'm watching on Amazon. It's not available on free TV now, the first season. It was, I think, $12 or $15. So I paid something for which I had already paid a cable fee for.
Sure. And I think, Stephen, that when they finally get the idea that they could charge more, not just charge more per month, but charge more in terms of limiting the number of people on your account
yeah.
to a much smaller number than five, which I believe is where they presently are at, I think that's an additional revenue source for them that they're going to tap in the not-too-distant future.
That's going to make for a very unhappy Bertrand home, I think, when they start limiting that way. Because it's true. I think they don't do a great job of keeping track of how many devices or you know, how many different users or things like that. That is something they certainly could tighten up.
Yeah, I think you're right. That there's pretty significant opportunity when they finally recognize the additional revenue they could get from those other Bertrands and Nigerians.
Right, or the people freelancing on the Nigerians and the Bertrands. Tell me a little bit about, you know, the health care reform law in the Senate or the bill. Mitch McConnell spoke today, then Chuck Schumer spoke. They're looking now at maybe just a repeal. I don't think there's a big chance of that happening. But how was Wall Street?
In fact, they just said they don't. They just announced they don't have the votes for the repeal either.
Oh, so they're not even going to do that. Okay. So what does that mean for Wall Street? I mean, I see United Health did well.
Yep, United Health. The ones that are going to be up in the air for a while are probably the hospitals. As to how they do, because there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. The president now says, well, we're just going to let it die then and bring the Democrats to the table that way. This is his statement just made moments ago before we left the Fast Money show. He says they're going to basically just walk away and say, okay, it's going to die. He claims the president said actually that it's dead. It's already dead. And that now the Democrats are going to have to come in if they want to save any parts of it. So we'll see how that plays out.
And so the hot potato is passed once again. I mean, it's an amazing thing. It's so easy to criticize when the other team's holding the potato, but when it comes your way, it's trouble.
True. Very, very true.
So we'll see how the Democrats can do now, if they'll move toward the Republicans at all. Okay, real quick, what are you watching today? What else?
Let's see. Ciena, C-I-E-N. This is a switching company on the tech space. It's down a little bit today, maybe 40 or 50 cents, right around the $25 mark. People are buying calls out in October, so we jumped in and bought that stock for our clients today.
John Najarian, great to talk to you. Thanks very much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Stephen.
You bet. You can watch John Najarian on CNBC at Fast Money or follow him on Twitter at John Najarian as well. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here. We're going to jump on the Harley.
Oh, boy.
And go for a ride. What's going on, Andrew Herman?
That's quite a sound, isn't it?
Andrew is the editor at DNA Info and comes by to talk about openings and closings.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think that was the sound of their stock price driving away today. They're down They're down almost 4.5% today.
Wow. Well, I mean, Harley's been having some difficulty in recent years. Their sales were down last year, and the problem being that the baby boomers are aging out of them and the millennials are not quite on board yet.
Yeah, you know, we just were, we talked yesterday about electric guitars and the same sort of thing. that sort of the people who grew up watching Clapton or even Eddie Van Halen, mm-hmm. you know, they're not buying guitars anymore. And a lot of the musicians these days aren't really sort of guitar heroes. They're not. So there aren't people for younger people to emulate. Same thing with the Harley?
Must be. One way they're trying to get around that, a guy is opening a Harley-Davidson dealership at Addison and Clark, better known as across the street from Wrigley Field. And the CEO was talking to a reporter about this, and he said, well, we got to get young people interested, and a freestanding dealership out in the suburbs is kind of intimidating.
Right.
But if you put these dealerships where people are, they might stumble across it, see it through a window, or just kind of walk around in there and catch the motorcycle bug.
So it's a little bit, yeah, the big one, I think, is out at the Glen in Glenview.
Mm-hmm, right.
And I know there's another showroom downtown, but the idea is that maybe it's just, it's more than, but kind of a 3D showroom for people to wander upon.
Right. So it's going to be a full service one, though. New and used motorcycles and all the Harley gear that people seem to like to get once they get a Harley. And, again, the idea being that maybe you weren't thinking about riding a motorcycle, but you were going to a Cubs game and you're 25, 30 years old. You see one, you say, wow, what's all that about?
Now, this is part of that big development that's still being built, not open till next year.
Right. So this is that big structure across the street there, 170,000 square feet of retail. It's going to have a Shake Shack and a movie theater and 150 apartments. So it's going to be a pretty significant living spending area right across the street from the field.
And not Cubs owned or Cubs owned?
That one I'm not sure. I think it is not.
Right.
The Ricketts family owns the hotel and the obviously, of course, the
conference center there.
The conference
center,
yeah. Right.
And
yeah.
The World Series rings. Mm-hmm. They own all of those.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go north to Uptown, the home of the Radicals. Now I always thought of Uptown as being pretty radical.
Yeah.
And here's the Haymarket publisher, right?
Right, right.
Well-known name in Chicago publishing.
Uh-huh.
And they're running into the NIMBYs, the Not In My Backyards.
Right. So there's this mansion at 800 West Buena Avenue, and it's in Uptown. 9 bedrooms, 2 full baths, 6.5 baths. 14,000 square feet. It's for sale for $2.3 million, and Haymarket Books wants to buy it and operate their book publishing offices there. And as you say, the neighbors are some of them are worried that it's going to become a magnet for radicals and revolutionaries.
Right. And so the socialists can afford a $2.3 million headquarters. That's not too bad.
Yeah. Well, they say they're going to have book and poetry readings over there, and people, they don't want the socialists showing up, though. Some of the neighbors say it's not a political thing. We just don't like parkers of any kind, you know, people driving into the neighborhood without any parking spaces.
Yeah, I read that. You know, anytime one of these things comes up, they all come up with excuses, and none of them is the real one. I mean, I circled something here. I read about the parking thing. There's already the Menominee Club there.
Right, right.
So that must be bringing in parkers.
Well, yeah, so that offers like kids classes.
Okay.
Like judo classes and things like that. So I think they would like somebody, maybe just a rich guy with two cars to show up and buy it. But Alderman Kappelman says that he's going to take a survey of the neighborhood and then make his decision in terms of zoning. I guess it needs some rezoning, and that's mostly under the control of the Alderman. And we'll see what happens, whether the radicals get kicked out, the revolutionaries are sent on their way, or we'll know where to buy our books, Steve.
You feel for, I know, right, you left-wing nut job.
Right.
Feel for Kappelman, right? He's like, I don't want this. I don't need to deal with this. Everyone's up in arms, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, the parking thing is always an issue in the city. Anytime anybody tries to do anything in the neighborhoods in the city, as the DNA Info reporters will consistently tell you almost every day, people say, no, there's no parking.
Right, I know.
And so that's always a big pushback against any development. This one's just one with a kind of a political twist to it.
You can read more at DNA Info Chicago. Andrew Herman in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
All right, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Muchen is in the studio. Welcome.
I'm having a hard time speaking to all that sour candy you guys fed me.
It's national, international, it's world, it's universe sour candy.
Global.
Day. Right. Why would anyone put a piece of sour candy in their mouth?
I put two as
what
I walked
are you, insane?
In. Because the first one I thought, this is okay. And then the second one I thought, I'm going to vomit.
Well, thank you for coming in. Good to see you again. Suzanne is the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that podcast at WGNRadio.com or on iTunes or just about anywhere, right?
Right.
Sometimes you're just playing it on the corner of Michigan Avenue.
Cabs have it blaring out.
That's when you know you've arrived, when you get in the cab and you can hear yourself.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for that. Suzanne comes by. We talk about issues of women in the workplace, by and large. And so Donald Trump last week was in Paris for Bastille Day. And I don't want to get too much into it because we all made fun of the fact that he apparently was checking out the First Lady of France, right?
Just, you know, as a matter of protocol.
Says she's really, what, put together?
No, he said, you're in such good shape.
Wonderful or something.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Okay. Uh-huh. Not a good thing to say.
I don't think so.
Not a big surprise that the president said it. What's interesting to me, though, is that a private company or a public company, I guess, is really publicly taking him on.
Yeah.
Reebok. Tell me about
that. I love that Reebok did this. So Reebok sent out one of the great visuals of, I think, the last month or so. And it's basically a diagram that says, here's when it's appropriate to say to someone, you're in such good shape. Beautiful. Okay. And it went viral, but I'm just going to note a couple of the moments without reading the full poster, although Steve can post it. So it asked questions like, are you in an elevator with a woman? In that case, no. You would
not say that. No.
Are you at the gym working out next to a woman? Steve?
Hey, you are really in good shape.
Would you go there?
No.
Good for you. Now, here's the one case in which it says it is okay. Steve, did you just find a forgotten action figure from your youth, unscathed, after decades, in your parents' basement?
Wow, this is really in good shape. Beautiful.
Perfect. See how that sounds?
All right, so that's from Reebok.
But I love it that they're not a company that has, you know, historically been about women, by women, for women. They're just an American company saying, hey, you know, let's just recognize this isn't normal.
Yeah, and interesting to see if there's anything to suffer for that. All right, so that's sports. Let's go from Paris up to Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And Venus Garolitis. No.
You just dated yourself. That was awesome.
Venus Williams was the big winner again. And there was quite a stretch between her championships. I hadn't realized that.
Yeah. And she's 37, which is kind of remarkable. I still think of her as being sort of the young sisters,
right? You just showed your age.
I did.
Wasn't that fun? All right. And so the same old thing came up. Andy Murray was asked about the men's side during a post-match news conference.
Andy, Sam is the first U.S. player to reach a major semifinal since 2009. How would you describe
male player?
I beg your pardon?
Male player, right?
Yes, yeah. First male player. That's for sure.
So the question was about the first the American
awesome.
Fans. Yeah,
I love
and
that
Murray's got a history of this.
He does.
Right.
And again, the theme I think from a couple of these conversations we're having is no one's trying to really be a feminist or get on a soapbox. This is just the normal way people should cover sports, right? I mean, Serena had 23 championships, 23. So to just write that off, and I love the way Andy Murray was just saying, guys, come on.
Well,
let's be direct here.
Well,
You're going to disagree. You're going to push back on this, Steve?
I'm not going to. Are you going to let me speak? Just let me speak, will you? As a guy who will ask questions in a news conference, mm-hmm. there you are asking questions in the setting of the men's tournament. I totally understand why he might have said that, the first American implied man to advance. Yeah, and that may well have come up with Venus, the first American or the first time an American hasn't advanced. So I kind of get that. I think that's absolutely excusable. The guy's not a pig for asking that question.
I didn't think the guy was a pig at all. Here's where I think we're headed with all of this. Right now, it's important to continue to recognize the female players because they don't always get the credit they deserve. I think in a future state, we will just refer to them all as players.
That's why I like Murray, because like you said, it's a nonchalant thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, no, you mean, he wasn't scolding the guy.
No, right.
He just was sort of pointing it out.
Yeah.
He did it before with Venus?
I can't remember the other circumstance, but he's been known as a guy who's, again, low-key about it, but just out there defending and respecting his female counterparts.
All right, I've held you back long enough, and now...
Well, look, Steve admitted, we were debating whether, or I debated with Steve last night and myself, whether Game of Thrones and talking about it on the show was a little too niche. Like, is this something that our listeners are really going to relate to? But I say yes.
It's 16 million people, I think,
16
watched.
16 million. I mean, if you're not watching Game of Thrones, well, first of all, you can't just jump in. This is season seven, people. But what I wanted to say, and the point of today's conversation really is that
and
after...
And I get the email, and I read the headline, and I'm thinking, is she going to make Game of Thrones about women, too? Is it everything?
This is how he rolls his eyes. You should see him rolling his eyes right now. Let's be honest.
You can hear it.
You can hear in your voice, which is sounding a little snarky, but can we just be honest about the fact that season seven is ladies' season?
You've seen one episode.
Steve.
What?
Who's in charge? Who's in charge? Who's headed for the throne or at the throne? Can you name a couple? Cersei, female. Arya, on the way, female. Sansa, female. And then there's my all-time favorite.
Ariana Grande.
No.
Who is it?
Lady Mormont. I mean, the little, she looks like 10, but she's in charge of this whole, you know, family. And she has this awesome scene right in the beginning where they're suggesting that they should train the women of the North and the girls along with the guys. And there's some pushback.
It was Jon Snow suggested that, right?
Yes, Jon Snow, who's still alive.
You left Jon Snow out of your list of leaders, but go ahead.
Okay, but
I'm just saying you did.
Let's just imagine. He should be dead. But anyway, she has this great line where she says, stands right up in the room and she says, look, I don't plan on knitting by the fire while men fight for me. I might be small, Lord Glover, and I might be a girl, but I'm every bit as much a northerner as you.
I like the I like the way you read it with Edith Ann's voice, too.
Edith. but come on, it's a season that where women, let's just acknowledge this, have been beaten down. They have been assaulted.
On this show.
Oh, yeah. Well, for seasons. Are finding their own force.
Well, the only thing I will say is that you've seen, I don't sit down to watch a show to see which gender is in charge.
Therein lies the difference between you and me.
I know. And so for me, it's kind of funny to me that you've seen one episode. And you've declared that this is now that episode was very much and
it's but we've
hurrah.
Been headed this way.
Yeah,
I mean we've been headed here. What I'd like to say is, this show has had a lot of violence and things happening to women that have not been pleasant to watch, and so you have to be a little gleeful to see them holding their own.
Okay,
are you not gleeful?
No, yeah, I think it's great, but I mean when you say that, my knee jerk reaction is like, yeah, and that stuff has happened to men too, right?
I don't quite think so.
Really?
That they've been held as, sex slaves.
Gray, what's the Graylin guy?
Yeah, Theon. Theon, I know,
Grey
he lost
Lord?
One
okay.
of his man parts. That's about the worst that happened.
Oh, shrug your
on
shoulders.
The show.
Okay, fine. Bad things happen to a lot of people in the show. I don't know how much of it is. I get the whole thing of it, and women certainly were on the rise in this episode, and I hope they are. I don't care. I really don't
They're
care.
They're great characters.
I don't care.
They're really
I don't
just
want it to
characters.
Become a gender conversation.
Okay, well, we just made it one.
All right, let's talk
on
about
your show.
Can't wait for next week's, mm-hmm. after all the newsletters you received. Suzanne Muschen, follow her at?
You can follow me on Instagram at my name, at Suzanne Muschen, on Twitter at Big Payoff Radio.
All right, good to see you. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. It's Tuesday, and well, it's not the first time I put my foot in my mouth this week, but I was talking as if Venus Williams won Wimbledon, and she did not. She lost, so that was my big, fat mistake. Sorry about that. I will try to be better for the rest of the show, and Richard Watt will help. Richard, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. You're listening to the lunch. Remember this. These are the words of Richard. If for everything you give your child, you take something away. Words from Richard Watts, a personal financial advisor and the author of the book entitled Mania. Let's start with a little house cleaning here. Richard, can you hear me okay? Because I'm hearing quite a bit of feedback on the line.
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, good. Well, let's start with that then, the notion that kids who don't suffer adversity end up paying the price as adults. What do you mean by that?
Well, entitled mania is this really epidemic type thing that's moved across the country. And what we find is that parents are failing to do one of two things. They're either failing to recognize they're giving too much to children, and that's taking away that incentive for them to learn how to succeed on their own and to identify their own wants and needs. And the second part is that they're taking away the struggle of their children, because it's hard, it's difficult. We love our kids, and you don't want to watch them struggle, and so you take away that struggle, and that gets them to a position where they're unable to really learn to persevere through things. They learn to default back to the parents to fix things. And those all create weaknesses in our children.
You know, I'm interested because you talk about the differences. Helicopter parents, who I guess we know about, but drone parents now, where they're actually going out and trying to clear the way for their kids. I've got two college-age kids, and I feel like I might be a little guilty there.
Yeah, drone parenting is more strategic. And I think we're getting smarter, we're more connected, and parents are beginning to be able to go forward. Instead of just being annoying parents that helicopter around their children, they're getting to a point where they're really attempting to look into what might be a danger in the future of their kids and try to smooth that out, whether that's helping them fill out their college applications or actually taking them and getting them settled in their college environment, which I think all of us feel like we need to do. But each one of those things you're giving your child, there's something you have to recognize you take away, a tool set that you take away from them.
You know, I feel like sometimes parents might even be looked at as neglectful if they leave their kids on their own. And what you're arguing really is a little neglect could go a long way.
What is fascinating, Steve, for me is that I look at the 30-somethings and always wondered whether this book would be popular amongst 30-somethings. And the comment that I've gotten from them is they've said, you know, we have become so internet savvy and doing our due diligence of being parents that we've got so much information coming to us that we never can get it all right. We feel like we're finding something we're doing wrong. And what your book has told us is that neglecting our kids ultimately might be a benefit. Say, letting them do things on their own and fall down on their own, both, you know, emotionally, physically, and otherwise, may be an ultimate benefit to them, and they're incredibly thankful and appreciative for someone to take the gas off their feeling of need to be the perfect parent.
All right, we finally found a guilt relief mechanism, I guess. You also write, we're about to see the greatest maybe transfer of wealth in the history of the world as the children of baby boomers inherit their parents' money. And Richard, your argument is that we should be looking about how little we should give our kids rather than how much.
The paradigm shift that I have advocated is just for parents not to blindly believe that handing their kids a bunch of money is a good thing. There have been more instances than not, than I've been at this 35 years of as an attorney and advisor of managing the inside of these families, and some of them are only transferring a house worth $800,000 to four kids, but you would never believe that in that situation the oldest, who was appointed trustee, would decide that he was going to create an ultimatum for his kids, his siblings, to say, I've decided to rent it, and even though your share is worth $200,000, if you want cash out, I'll pay you half. And all of a sudden, they begin to negotiate, and that family never speaks again after the lawyers and the court systems get done arguing over $200,000. And if you think that was a bad family to begin with, it wasn't. It was a wonderful family, but parents really never gave any thought to how this was going to transfer. And that's really negligent of a parent not to look carefully at what's going to happen.
So don't let your kids be the executor of the will. All right, we've got about a minute left. Tell me the difference between, I love this story, warm money and cold money.
So to show you an example how bad it can get, we had a very wonderful client of mine with well-meaning children that didn't know any better in their 40s. And they convened a meeting, and all three of them walked into my conference room. They called the meeting themselves. And the oldest took command of the meeting and looked over at mom and said, and dad, and said, you know something, you guys have a fair amount of money, more than you need to live on, and we consider there to be two kinds of money, warm money and cold money. The warm money is that money that you're able to give us with love while you're alive and hug us, and we can hug you back and say thank you. The cold money is the money that you have to give us when you die, and we're just going to take it, and we have no gratitude about it, and we have no one to hug. And the conclusion with all of them nodding together was, we would like more of the warm money, if you please.
And the parents responded by not only not giving them warm money, but giving them a little less cold money.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right what happened. But it was a wake-up, because these are good parents, and their intentions were good. But looking backward, it took a long time, little step at a time, to look backward and realize the altitude they had gained off of what they thought was normal.
Richard Watts, the name of the book entitled Mania, How Not to Spoil Your Kids and What to Do If You Have. Great to talk to you. I appreciate you taking time today.
Thank you, Steve. Been a pleasure.